Comment and Condiments, being a program fashioned from Food for Thought, well-seasoned, and presented by Trupak, brand name for quality foods. The romance and adventure behind the food you eat, personalities you know, items for your household scrapbook, and a pinch or two of wit, these ingredients make up Trupak's Comment and Condiments, as stirred and folded by Yvonne. So shall we start with, what won't they think of next?
That we shall, John. There's a man in Wisconsin who grows pre-salted celery. It took him 7 years to perfect his idea, but he claims he finally has succeeded. By mixing 1,000 pounds of salt with the soil in which he plants his celery, he produces the crisp delicacy, properly and naturally seasoned. No, he hasn't found a way to grow noiseless celery, not yet. But what won't they think of next?
Pre-salted celery. That's a new one on me, but I'll trade you, Yvonne. I have an odd item, too.
Fine, John. What is it?
Do you know what flour you use as a corsage and also use in your kitchen?
All in the same night, John? Good heavens, I give up.
It's the orchid, used as decoration and as a flavoring. Vanilla, to be exact. So the next time you see an orchid, think of that bottle of vanilla on your pantry shelf. Because by a trick of old Mother Nature, pure vanilla extract is made from a native subtropic plant, a climbing vine of the orchid family. And the next time you buy vanilla, think of Trupak, for the simple reason that your grocery money can't buy better, tastier, richer vanilla. Yes, ladies, here's a real honest-to-goodness vanilla, the kind that means so much to those wonderful cakes and cookies of yours. But that's not all. Trupak has many other wonderful extracts, such as almond, anise, wild cherry, pineapple, butterscotch, and rum, all highly concentrated, full of rich, natural flavor. All the very finest quality. For all your baking, for candies, cakes, and puddings, use Trupak extracts. And now, Yvonne, again with items from our file on foods, titled...
Ham, from History to Here. You probably noticed that one of the few individuals to share the front page with the atom bomb after the first bikini test was a pig, Pig 311, who allegedly survived the deadly radioactive water of the lagoon and thereby swam into fame of an unusual type for his kind.
Yvonne, did you notice that foreign newspaper's cartoon Pig 311 as riding through American cities in the rear seat of a luxurious automobile as confetti streamed down upon him from nearby skyscrapers and thousands of humans cheered him from the sidewalk?
That's our pig.
And so a pig has a part of probably the most important event of this year, 1946, the first post-war step into the atomic era.
From this point, we traced Pig 311's ancestors to somewhere near the vague beginning of things and discovered that the sharp hooves of his breed have been leaving their marks in history all the time. By the time the Bible was ready to be written, for example, his diet habits were well enough known to become the basis for the proverbial warning about casting pearls in front of his eager mouth. His tender carcass was the principal meat of the conquering Romans, who had some expansive variations for his preparation. One simple little recipe consisted of stuffing him with thrushes, partridges, grouse, oysters, lobster meat, and anything else that might tickle the palates of Caesar's followers. Then he was cooked whole with more variations, one of which was roasting one side and boiling the other.
Probably a feat that modern cooks gladly leave buried in the debris of the Parthenon.
Right. Well, one of the pig's next historical appearances was in 1113 A.D. in France, when a young king and a city felt his influence. It's told that King Philip was cantering through the ancient city of Reims when a careless porker, running hoof loose in the streets, wandered in front of the royal horse, causing it to stumble and throw the king, who failed to survive the accident. France lost a ruler, and the pig lost his carefree liberty, for from that day forward, all swine in Reims were ordered to wear bells around their bristly necks. But Pig 311, like his grandfather from Reims and other antecedents, will soon be forgotten for his place in history. But never will the pig be forgotten for his place on the table, and especially that part of him which goes through the fence last.
Nicely put, Yvonne. And you mean, of course, the ham. Lowly and simple is ham with eggs, but here is ham with glamour.
And truly glamour. We found our particular smoked ham nestled serenely in a refrigerator belonging to Mr. and Mrs. Alan Ladd. We found also that baked ham is one of Alan's favorite foods, and in a rather careless loose-leaf notebook, set down in sprawled longhand, we found Mrs. Ladd's favorite baked ham recipe. Sue described it as a never-failing route to her famous husband's heart.
So a recipe is the key to that gun-for-hire heart, huh?
Well, one of them at least, John. But Sue has some others. You know, she's been a help to Alan since before they were married, when she was Sue Carroll, a talent agent, and started him toward the top. Now she's a charming wife and mother of one daughter, Alana. Their spacious home rests high in the Hollywood Hills, overlooking the city that's brought them both success and happiness, and they spend much of their time in it. But one point is apparent. They're both creatures of impulse, and their sudden ideas lean toward motor trips. You know, it's not at all uncommon to see the lads leave their home, complete with luggage, at any time of the day or night. On one occasion, Canada suddenly seemed a nice place to be. They wanted leisure, they wanted peace. They craved Lake Louise and Banff. The time was 3 a.m., so they got up, packed their skis, skates, warm clothing, and within an hour and a half, they were on their way. They don't try to analyze their travel impulses. They just answer the call and have a good time. And indirectly, we have these impulses to thank for Sue's fine baked ham recipe. They discovered it on a sudden trip that took them through Virginia, to many the birthplace of fine baked ham.
And no wonder, Yvonne. I was down in the Old Dominion last year, and those fine hickory smoked hams take on all the aspects of a civic institution, sir.
And speaking of ham, John...
I beg your pardon?
When the ham arrives in the gleaming, beautifully spacious lad kitchen, it's put into a large pan, covered with water, and allowed to stand overnight or longer. Sue's actual preparation the next day follows this schedule. The ham, after being scrubbed with a brush under fresh, cold water, is placed in a roasting pan equipped with a cover. Into the pan, then, is poured enough water, cider, wine, or even beer to cover the bottom with about 2.5 inches of liquid. Sue uses any of these, but white wine tops the list for her. Then the cover is adjusted. The roasting pan is placed in a moderate oven from, oh, say, 350 to 375 degrees Fahrenheit, and the ham is baked 30 minutes for each pound of its weight.
And along about here is where I start tearing me hair.
Why, John, what's the matter?
Oh, I rate myself as a pretty normal sort of a guy, Yvonne, but when that aroma of baked ham, that beautiful, rich scent, reaches my nostrils...
Oh, John, calm down.
I follow it like a hunting dog to the oven, and I always get there about an hour or so too early. And that's when I tear my hair just waiting.
Well, John, your tortures aren't over then, because we have some more adding to do now.
Well, I don't think I can make it, but I'll try.
It'll be worth the wait. Just about 20 minutes before the total baking time has elapsed, the ham is taken from the oven, and the rind is trimmed to leave about 1/4 inch of fat. Then, a blended mixture of 1 generous teaspoon of dry mustard and 1 tablespoon of prepared mustard is spread over the surface. And the next and final addition is a single cup of fruit juice, which is poured gently over the ham.
And Yvonne, may we suggest Trupac's delicately prepared, nature-ripe orange juice?
I can't think of a better suggestion, John. And then, having done that, the roasting pan is sent back to the same oven, this time, however, without the cover. And the last 20 minutes of cooking is made most important by basting, basting, basting. Sue's delightful mixture of white wine, fruit juice, the natural juices from the meat itself, all sharpened just a touch by the mustard, gently caresses the noble ham, adding its flavor until the finished product appears aromatic and beautiful, and is taken to its place of honor at the head of the table. May we suggest again that it be surrounded by Trupac's prepared sweet potatoes, natural attendants to such a royal dish, and served with Trupac's canned French peas. Mmm, a way to Alan Ladd's heart? I defy any man to remain cool and unmoved when faced with this steaming, tempting vision. You, m'lady, may smile with pride. You are serving ham with glamour.
I would like to say, Yvonne, that I am not cool and unmoved when faced with even the description of this...
A beautiful picture, really, John.
A masterpiece. But do you mind if I add just one little item? A cocktail for the dinner?
Of course I don't, John. Go ahead.
My choice, and that of a big share of the male eaters, will be a chilled pineapple juice cocktail before a meal like that. Icy cold, just tart enough, but still sweet. A treat in itself. And the next time you buy pineapple juice, will you look for the name Trupac on the can? I'll tell you why. Trupac gives you the pure, sweetly tart juice of real Hawaiian pineapples, the finest in all the world. These plump, juicy fellows are grown on the island of Kauai, where the rich volcanic soil and the lazy tropical sun produce pineapples that have a special, deep golden color and fine, luxurious flavor. Pour yourself a glass. Hold it up to the light. Notice how tempting, how rich, how refreshing it looks. Taste it. See how proudly nature has done her job. For remember, TruPac pineapple juice is unsweetened, undiluted. Yes, drink a glass of this wonderful juice and you drink a glass of tropical sunshine. That's TruPac pineapple juice. And now, Yvonne, a subtitle and a follow-up, if you please.
Well, let's list this one under palate pleasantries. And if you're the type that likes to see first the raised eyebrow of question and then the pleased smile of pleasant surprise pass over the faces of your guests, this is one for your scrapbook. The eyebrow will lift when you serve garlic popcorn instead of the usual crouton with soup. The pleasant surprise will soon follow. First, pop the corn, or get it freshly popped and untouched by the sometimes ancient butter of the street vendors. Then, to 1 cup of butter or oleo, add 1 finely chopped garlic clove. Simmer these very gently for 5 minutes, and then pour the liquid through a fine sieve to remove the chopped garlic. Pour the resulting garlic butter over a bowl of the popcorn, toss it diligently, and it's ready. A fine compliment to soups. You'll be remembered as a hostess after you've introduced this palate pleasantry.
A trip into the miscellaneous, we reach our final department called Trifles and Truffles.
And first, a trifle about truffles themselves. For the first time since 1939, those dainty, tasty little tubers are being shipped to this country from Europe. And here's a little-known note on their gathering. They're subterranean, you know, these tiny black morsels, so, of course, invisible to the searchers. The Europeans use more of Pig 311's ancestors to find them. The pigs, on leashes, locate the truffles by scent, stop to eat them, are discouraged by rings in their noses which hold their heads up and stop their eager mouths from quite reaching the ground. A quick, delicate excavation, and a few more truffles are on their way to market.
And now two items, hysterically historical.
King Philip of Spain, after a hearty dinner, was always in the mood for a little music. To make sure he got it, he hired the leading male singer of the period to stand by to perform each evening. Well, that's decidedly kingly. But the strange thing about the arrangement was that the king demanded the same 4 songs sung without change every night for 10 years. And it leads us to wonder if maybe the Spaniards' incessant revolts weren't against, will you pardon us, monotonous monarchs?
From the early American scene.
From the Ladies' Friend, the monthly magazine of literature and fashions, August 1870, under the heading Syllabub, a sauce for certain puddings. Make 1 quart of rich cream, very sweet. Grate 1/2 nutmeg over it. Put it into a china bowl and milk a cow over it that it may be very frothy.
Well, that's all right if you happen to have a cow handy.
Well, lots of people did in those days.
Here's a note under placemat chit-chat.
Preston Sturges, the famous Hollywood writer, director, producer, and a great connoisseur of foods and feeding, has a dining room in which the table and the food upon it swim in brilliant light while the rest of the room is in total darkness. You know, that's not a bad idea considering that the table and the food are the most important features of the room. The movie industry and calories with Klieg lights.
And jot down this useful tip, or a detail for dilemmas.
When one of your prize glasses hits the floor and spreads its glittering self into a dangerous circle of jagged pieces and insidious slivers, while you're counting 10 times 10 before you fly into a rage, do this. Moisten a wad of common cotton very slightly, and after picking up the larger pieces by hand, employ a blotting action to the area. The tiny sharp bits will come away on the cotton.
Which brings us to the bottom of Comment and Condiments, being a program fashioned from food for thought, well seasoned, and presented by TruPac, brand name for quality food. Listen tomorrow at this same time when some of the food for thought will come from the mouth of J.L. Caulfield, amateur chef and food expert in his own right, who will talk across the table to Yvonne. And don't forget on Thursday, we'll bring to the microphone the lucky lady picked from the crowds in one of the Bay Area stores featuring TruPac foods and judge the best dressed shopper of the week. Your announcer is John Galbraith.
And I'd like to say goodbye with a final tip for the tidy. The next time you're preparing a blouse or slip for ironing, don't sprinkle it with plain water. Mix a little of your favorite cologne with it. Your garment will be delicately scented when ironed and ready to wear. You, m'lady, will be more alluring. And now, this is Yvonne saying goodbye.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.